Welcome to Gold Star Classroom, the podcast where our panelists go back to school. We'll grade them on their answers to a variety of general knowledge and trivia questions. They don't know what we're going to ask, and we don't know what they're going to say. The student with the highest grade at the end of the class will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana. I'm your host and headmaster, Professor Jerry Jaffe. Welcome to today's episode of Gold Star Classroom. I am, as always, your host and headmaster, Dr. Jerry Jaffe, and it is my pleasure to introduce today's students. On my right, an actor and comedian from New York, Mark Riccadonna.
Groovy music, man.
Thanks for being here. On my left, sir, comedian and writer from Boston and now New York, Sean Lynch.
Howdy dowdy.
Howdy dowdy indeed. Howdy dowdy indeed. And sitting across from me today is comic and professional turtle appreciator, Tim Danko.
Thanks for having me, Jerry. Who told you how much I love turtles?
It's not a secret anymore. It's an open secret. It's okay. We're all aware. Yeah, it's one of the things we admire about you. Turtles being a subset of all human knowledge could be your key to success today, as I'm going to quiz and test all of you on subjects ranging the expanse of human knowledge in an effort to test you and, as any good teacher would, assign grades.
Uh-oh.
At the end of the class, the student with the highest grade will win the coveted classroom prize, the Golden Banana.
Golden banana.
Sounds fantastic.
Are you gentlemen ready for your first quiz question?
I'm more than ready.
Yes.
We're going to get into a topic.
Sean, you can't cheat on your phone.
Please, Sean.
Damn it.
No classroom, no phones in the classroom.
All right.
It's poor classroom etiquette.
Damn it.
And minus 5 points for swearing. Now.
You're in the hole.
Make him wear the dunce hat.
I decide who wears the dunce hat here. Minus 10 points for Tendenko.
We all end up
40 points.
Here is your first quiz question.
Anyone who gets a zero is going to win this.
Can you name the planets of our solar system? Gentlemen.
Let's start with Venus, Mercury, Earth, Uranus, Saturn.
Mars, Jupiter.
Pluto is not a planet, or is it now?
I think it is now again.
It's back to being a planet?
This, of course, is one of the hidden traps of this question, is what you think Pluto is.
He's a wonderful dog in the Disney movies.
There is yet another planet you haven't named yet, besides deciding on Pluto.
Say Earth. You say Earth?
We did say Earth.
Neptune.
Correct. 10 points for Tim Danko.
Dank.
Back to zero. Right.
I got really sad when they demoted Pluto.
Right.
Because I grew up with Pluto, you know?
Sure, that's sometimes.
I know it since it was this big.
Yes. Being this big is actually the problem. Pluto is not that large of a body, and there are other celestial bodies in our very own solar system of similar size. So kind of like, should we have a 51st state? It's a similar thing. If we can keep Pluto as a planet, then suddenly there's three or four more planets at least.
Really?
But they're all small. Pluto and these other bodies are not as big as any of the other eight planets. So they went that way. The technical phrase or jargon is dwarf planet.
It's a dwarf planet.
Pluto is considered a dwarf planet.
That's little person.
Can we just say little planet? I feel like dwarf planet's a little offensive.
Indeed. There are a few other dwarf planets in our, or little planets if you prefer, in our solar system. There's probably one
that's the
most well known. Do you know what the other large rock is that's not big enough to be a planet, but is big enough to be worth mentioning?
A planetoid? An asteroid?
Well, I have not an asteroid. Asteroids are quite small, relatively speaking.
Be any of the moons
in
the system, maybe?
Some of Jupiter's moons are quite large, but because they orbit Jupiter, they're not in the same category as Pluto would be. This is an object that actually... I'll give you a reasonable astronomy hint. Okay. You did name all the eight planets. Which one's closest to the sun?
Mercury.
Mercury, Venus, Earth,
Mars.
And then what's next?
Saturn.
No.
Jupiter.
Jupiter is correct, except there's one thing they usually mention that's between Mars and Jupiter.
There's a dingleberry.
There are several dingleberries. The so-called asteroid belt.
I want to hear Carl Sagan say that. Several dingleberries.
Billions and billions of dingleberries.
Yeah, you see his 12-year-olds in a planetarium like
billions and billions of dingleberries.
It's the one time the planetarium got an applause break.
There's a lot of dingleberries near Uranus.
Carl Sagan's drunk again.
All right. That bell you heard was the second Uranus joke since we started this topic. In the asteroid belt, there are rocks of various sizes, but there's one larger one that has its own individual name, and that is also a dwarf planet now, considered a dwarf planet. That's Ceres, C-E-R-E-S. That's the largest of the rocks in the asteroid belt, and it's about the same size as Pluto.
Wow.
You were getting them in order correctly, with Neptune being the furthest away. Of course, we're talking about huge numbers. How far do you think Neptune is out, approximately?
From Earth? From the Sun.
Distance from the Sun.
From the Sun.
Yep. Just approximately.
Well, I saw in the scale model it was about this far.
And on that scale, sir, if every inch was equal like a million or 100 million miles, you'd be close.
I'm going to say it's one of those million huge, light years.
It's one of those. What? A million light years would not be the correct answer.
Damn it.
I think that's the distance to heaven.
Approximately.
I feel like it depends. How many dingleberries are from the Sun?
Mr. Sagan, put the scotch down.
Well, from the Sun to the outer reaches of our own solar system is considered about one light year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Do you know the distance to the next nearest star?
I was just listening to somebody talk about this stuff.
Was it me?
Just now?
That's weird, deja vu. You remembered what you just heard.
No, there was somebody, they were talking about how to fathom the universe is endless.
Well, and then just how huge it is as well. Just,
and that it might be part of another thing that is endless.
Yep.
Now we're just getting in the stoner area.
Well, to get out of the stoner area, Neptune is approximately 3,000 million miles. I'm rounding off to a round number there, but it's approximately 3,000 million.
What if it was exactly
miles?
That? That would be weird.
It would be weird because it's moving. So it would have to be like exactly that all the time. It would have to be like such an intricately perfect circle. Now, the whole solar system is about a radius of about one light year. The next nearest star is about 4 light years away. That's Proxima Centauri.
Of course.
But I mentioned that
naturally
because I have one more planet-related question for you.
This planet of the Apes. Sock it to me.
Captain Planet. Earth.
No. 5 points, minus 5 points, 10 points. I'm not sure why.
Jesus. You know what? Mark has the Captain Planet mullet, so he maybe should be a couple points.
For that gorgeous mullet, 1 gold star.
Right.
Outside of our own Earth.
I'm putting on my T-top.
So outside of our own solar system, what is the next closest planet? Anyone know?
Tatooine.
Sacagawea.
I don't even...
Planet Hollywood.
Zuba.
Let's see.
This question really tests your knowledge of astronomy because it's... I wouldn't quite say it's obscure, but you'd have to be a fan of astronomy. You know that if you just watch the news, they're now starting to find planets that other star systems have planets too. And they've known that for a while, and every once in a while they'll pop up on the news, here's another planet. But what people probably don't realize is that there's another class of planet that nobody ever talks about, that's only been known about for a few years. The astronomers' jargon is rogue planets. There are planets that don't circle stars. They are considered to be circling the galaxy itself.
They're the Sarah Palin of
They can see Earth from her back porch.
I wonder how the Olympics was. We should have just asked her.
So there is a rogue planet not far from Earth, and that is the next nearest planet.
Could it somehow latch into our solar system and get on a...
It's probably too far for that to happen in any likely scenario. One of the reasons why our own solar system is about one light year radius is because that's about the limit of the gravitational effect of our sun. So this next planet that I'm referring to is 80 light years away. So it's not close enough that it could be affected in that way, and that latching on suddenly becoming part of our solar system.
Coming on in. I used to be a loner planet, but sometimes you just need some company, you know?
We went union.
I heard you guys don't like Pluto anymore, so figured you need a new number 9.
Replace that little faggot.
As astronomers identify objects, and you know, like as an amateur astronomer, if you identify a new object, you get to name it. So that's fun. Oh, yeah. That's reason enough to buy a telescope right there.
You would buy a telescope.
But there are so many objects and, you know, so many professional scientists that a lot of these objects are named by catalog numbers. And I mention that only because the name of our nearby rogue planet that's the closest.
TK429.
Even that would be more interesting than PSOJ318.5-22.
Oh, I thought that was a school on the Upper West Side.
It should be. It should be. All right. Well, that is the end of our first quiz question. As I tally your scores so far, I notice that all of your grades are divisible by 3. And it has been noted that I often use constructive criticism to build up my students and that I should try to be more positive sometimes. So I have a list here of over 100 random ways to praise your child. And here's one for you guys. You're a treasure.
Hey. Living treasure.
You know what? I do feel better. I do.
Now,
that
gentlemen,
really picked me up.
I have a phrase. It's a phrase I'm sure you've heard before. And
you suck.
Well, I know you've heard that before.
What he didn't tell you is that he also calls the lint in his belly button a treasure.
I have stories about that lint, but I'll tell you later. Here's a common phrase. I'm sure you've heard it. For all intensive purposes. But do you know what that phrase actually means? Carry on.
For all
intensive purposes.
See, my whole life I had it wrong. I thought it was for all intent and purposes. So, Sean, what are you pondering? Because I didn't even know the phrase.
We'll take Mark's first comment under advisement.
I thought it was...
For all intensive purposes. Have you never heard the phrase for all intents
and
purposes?
No, I had it. I thought it was for all intent and purposes.
Every relevant purpose? Relevant reason? For all relevant reasons?
For all relevant reasons? Something like that? Sean, what do you think?
I always thought the phrase was for all intensive purposes. As if it were...
For all intensive purposes.
Yes.
For all intensive purposes.
Yes.
I think that's what I said. I have to go back and check the tape.
Yes.
Right. And Tim offered a possible definition, and Mark said he heard it differently.
Yeah.
Or thought it was a slightly different phrase.
I was wrong. I hold up. Okay.
Well,
I would imagine its origins, possibly its origins would take place, some sort of, it's a medical phrase, I guess? I don't know.
Could have medical connotations or denotations. Yeah. Well, Mark Riccadonna, you get an A.
Woo-hoo!
Because, in fact, the correct phrase is for all intents and purposes.
Look at that.
And it is a kind of legal jargon that you might find in a contract or some other legalese. But in everyday speech, people often say for all intensive purposes erroneously.
Erroneous!
But there are a whole list, like linguists or people who study language, of these phrases.
Cupboard. It's supposed to be cupboard.
Well, this is slightly different, but I know what you mean. But this is where, because of hearing it, people have turned it into the wrong phrase, and now the wrong phrase gets used in conversation, especially in conversation, but sometimes in writing, and people don't necessarily realize they're using.
Sandwich.
Well, that's sort of the vagaries of how words and spelling develop, cup of board and sandwich. This is like, have you ever heard anyone refer to Alzheimer's as old-timer's disease?
Yeah.
Tim has.
So really? I do that all the time with music. I'll hear a song, and I hear it wrong, and then I'll, like, just keep singing.
Yeah, there's a Huey Lewis song where the elbow is barely breathing.
What?
No, the lyric is, the old boy is barely breathing, but it sounds like he's saying the elbow is barely breathing. So that's that mistake is common enough that there's a word for it. Like, linguists have developed a word for this error. Has anyone come across this before? Do you know what the technical word for this type of
screwing up
is?
That's the technical talk. You know, those are lawyers speaking.
Have you ever come across anyone who would call an acorn an eggcorn?
Mm-mm.
Sometimes acorns are called eggcorns.
Eggcorn.
Mm-hmm. And that is what linguists have adopted for this error. They're now called eggcorns.
Eggcorns?
E-G-G corn. Eggcorns.
Wow.
We were just talking about when people splice words together and it becomes like, you know, you all. And then in the South they say y'all.
Sure.
And then in Pittsburgh it's yins, which comes from you ones.
You ones, yins, sure.
Became yins. That's kind of like an eggcorn.
Right.
Eggcorn just sound right. I prefer like a phonetotard or something.
This whole world is just filled with acorns and dingleberries.
As far as
Well, in the realm of humor, there's a similar feature, but it's not the same, but we can compare it.
Mm.
Do you know, and I'll just ask and see if you know, you've heard the expression... Do you know what a malapropism is? That's a subgenre of humor writing, or joke writing, malapropism.
Which means that we should all probably know it, but none of us do.
For some reason, I keep thinking of
marshmallow treat.
Malapropism.
I love
thinking of what's his name? Carrot Top's entire career.
Malaprop. He's malapropping again.
He's the worst props ever. Okay.
Plus 10,000 points for inventing a whole new thing. That's glorious.
It is sold to Carrot Top on top of it.
It's like melodrama for prop guys.
Now, acorns are errors, and malapropism is a type of humor writing. But it's a type of humor writing in which errors are depicted. Usually it's when non-English speaking characters make mistakes with the language.
Oh my God, I did a movie and it was written by an Indian guy.
Okay.
And they wanted it to be in English, but it wasn't their first language.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire script was like, nobody speaks like this.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy the cold beverage much. Thank you for giving it to me.
Well, it's like that movie, Birdemic. Have you guys seen Birdemic? It is the worst film ever.
No, but this sounds like the greatest homework assignment I've ever been given.
It's a really bad B horror film that was like shot.
B? God, you're generous.
How far down does the scale go at that point?
It was shot on like a phone, practically, but it was...
But in a non-ironic way.
No, yeah, this guy wanted to make like a modern-day version of The Birds, but the guy had never made a film before, never really taken a class, I don't think, had never... But he was also... English was his second language. I believe he was Korean or something, but he's... The dialogue between the characters was so wonderfully bad that like the movie became insanely popular just because the dialogue.
It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
Fans and aficionados of classic comedy, of course, will love the Marx Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
So almost all the humor around Chico Marx
is malapropisms, because he always gets the words wrong. Mm-hmm. So Groucho says, this part of the map is where the viaduct is. And then Chico says, why a duck? Why a no chicken? So that's a malapropism.
He's like, how are you my brother and from another country and speaking another language? That's my favorite. Once from one episode, I'd like to be like, has anybody else noticed it's a little weird that our brother talks like a Puerto Rican from the Bronx? It'd be
great. Well, in their stage act, Groucho's character was done with a German accent.
Oh, really?
But by the time they got to Broadway, they had decided to make it sort of American English instead of. Because he was like a German headmaster, and so he would always be like the know-it-all, condescending, control freak. But they thought when they were sort of going mainstream Broadway that that was too many ethnic characters.
Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know that, man.
All right. So that's malapropisms and egg corns.
Nice.
Linguistic errors.
They're amazing omelets put together.
Maybe you can send an egg corn to Carrot Top. Or it could be egg corn top.
Egg corn. Smurby-da-baby-da-boo.
Well, I'm going to need to start working on your grades here, and you're going to need to start working on your answers. But you have one more chance to redeem yourself.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to start with a simple question, and then we'll expand into some of the more complicated parts of this question. What do the letters ZIP in your address stand for? In America, we have a thing called the zip code. What do the letters ZIP actually stand for?
Ooh.
Man.
That's a good one, isn't it?
There's not a lot of Z words.
Man, zoning, I'm guessing. Maybe P is proximity. immediate. I don't know. This is me guessing.
Zipper. You. One of your words was right. So zoning? You get a 33%.
Okay.
Nice.
Actually, zone, so 30%.
Zone, okay.
Minus three for the ing. So zone, the Z stands for zone, and then I and P stand for?
Internal?
initial?
In. Zone in
Do you,
property?
In the history of the development of addresses and postal codes, do you know when the zip code was officially introduced into the American address?
I'm going to say 36.
We have a vote for 36.
Yeah,
is that 1936?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, just we got to check that rock outside. Throw me for a loop.
I would actually say earlier, like 1907 or something.
I'm going to say even earlier than that because I'm thinking Pony Express. They had zip codes or whatever to each which Pony Express you would take it to. So I'm going to say...
I always picture the Pony Express that you have a package that says Bob's House, Denver. Because there just wasn't that many, people around.
That is kind of how it was in the 19th century. The use of zip codes or otherwise formalizing addresses is a 20th century series of developments. Before they had the zip code... Earlier, I won't say as early as 1907, but earlier part of the 20th century, by 20s and 30s, the post office started using zone. They just had ZPs.
Zone in place.
ZPs.
Mm-hmm.
And then that helped, but it was also irregular. So it like helped for a while, but then it became part of the confusion.
Okay.
So then they had to improve it even more and regularize it thoroughly. Zone improvement plan. Zone improvement plan. The zone improvement plan also had a second component to it, by the way, which was OH stands for
Ohio.
So the regularizing of two-letter abbreviations for all 50 states was part of that same set of reforms.
Cliff Claiborne was here. He would have got it.
Yes. That question had Cliff Claiborne written all over it.
Yeah, contrary to popular belief.
This use of some version of zip codes, which is a sort of like numerical grids over cities and states to help mail services and mail carriers deliver their mail, is a 20th century development around the world. In the United States, we adopted the ZIP reforms in 1963.
Wow.
1963. And as you might guess, by such a late-sounding year, we were not the first country to experiment with zip codes. Really? I have here a list of some of the countries who started experimenting with what's sometimes called modern postal codes. You probably will never guess the country.
China.
No, that first introduced a modern postal code system. I'll tell you the year we're talking about is 1932.
Just because he said you'll never guess, I'm going to say Mexico.
Okay, we have a guess for China, a guess for Mexico. Any other guesses? You'll get so many gold stars put on your face if you can guess this.
Lexingburg.
Oh, Japan. It's Japan, because that's where they lived.
I have lived in Japan, that is true. Japan has the worst postal zoning system of any modern country.
There's so many people, isn't there?
No, it's just the way they have it organized is through a different, almost like psychological, mathematical model. So I'll tell you stories later. The correct answer is the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic was the first country to introduce a modern postal code.
Back in my country.
They didn't even have toilets yet. They had a postal service.
Yakov Smirnov. Each one of your questions have a comedian mascot.
The Germany, 1941. Argentina, 1958. The UK, 1959. The United States, 1963.
Wow.
And, of course, now the United States uses a system called ZIP Plus 4. Do you know when that started?
Search me. I'm going to say 2011.
1983.
Bing, 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 bing. We have a winner. The 1980s. There's not a specific year because it was incrementally implemented. And even now it's not 100% requirement. Although
Who uses
likes to
those
see it.
Usually?
Businesses, institutions, government offices. But for your household postage, it doesn't really.
I don't even know mine.
Yeah. No. Who does? Few people do. Do you know yours, Mark? Your plus four? Do you know your plus four?
No.
You know your zip code.
You want to hear something crazy? Here's a little known fact. My parent zip code is my gym membership number at Planet Fitness.
Just by coincidence?
Yeah.
All right.
Completely weird.
Nice.
I'm glad you bring that up because we've reached the part of the show.
How do we forget about Planet Fitness?
It's all the way around.
Man. And that is a full circle.
All right. So while I'm calculating your final grades, you each get one more chance at extra credit. You may share.
I already said Planet Fitness. So,
You wish to offer that as your extra credit offering for today's class?
Not if I get another one.
You do get another one.
All right.
Everyone gets one more chance to say something intelligent sounding. Who's ready, students?
Let's start.
Remember, this could decide who actually wins the coveted golden banana.
This is a big moment. This is a big... All right. Since the coincidence thing about Planet Fitness, my best friend from high school has the exact same phone number with a different area code as my wife.
Really?
Her cell phone number.
Is your wife your best friend from high school?
No.
Okay.
But it was a different area code. Instead of 330, it was 215. But then the rest of the number was the same.
That is quite a mysterious occurrence.
God's running out of things. I'm seeing the same extras over and over.
Yep.
Starting to see that this is, what was that, Jim
Carrey movie? Yes.
At any moment.
Yeah, it's just Jackson a light's going to fall out of the sky. Yeah, and Jackson Pollock's going to talk to you through a big speaker.
Yeah.
The Truman Show.
Yeah, that's it.
All right.
I love that movie.
All right. Sean, what extra bit of knowledge do you have for us?
Let's see. Does anybody know Sherlock Holmes's address? Anybody? No?
Cocaine 101 Street.
23B Baker Street.
Yes.
Why, yes. We're Sherlock buddies now.
Yeah. That was awesome.
So the answer to your
you're the
question,
first person
Sean,
that I've
yes,
ever had. So somebody get that right. Yeah.
Well, you nor any of my students will be surprised to discover that I have, in fact, read every single Sherlock Holmes story.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of that growing up, man. Sherlock Holmes is awesome.
Tim Danko, please shed some light on the proceedings.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. And, I think I'm going to go with Motorhead. What's your price?
Don't do more than four bars, please.
No, that's all I got. That's all I wanted to do. Okay. That part.
We can't. Well, it was in parody.
Yes. Now we have acorns, malapropisms, and parody all going in the same classroom. It's out of control, I tell you.
It's the zaniest podcast.
It's bedlam.
This is the zaniest podcast in the classroom ever.
Wacky.
All right, well, that just leaves it to me to calculate the final grades, and we've determined that with a score of 1, Tim Danko wins today's Golden Banana.
Danko with 1.
I've got the Golden Banana.
Danko's going to eat it like a toothless
Robert Goulet brings him out. You're our Golden Banana.
So that just leaves it for me, your host, Dr. Jerry Jaffe, to thank you, my students, Sean Lynch.
Thanks for having me.
Tim Danko.
Thank you.
And Mark Riccadonna.
I'm going to wear a banana hammock tonight at the show.
Too much information.
And we'll see.
Thank you and good night. Gold Star Classroom is written and produced by Jerry Jaffe. Our producer and engineer is Stephen Gutierrez. Original music composed and produced by Jeff Gettert. Mr. Gettert is also our assistant producer. All commentary and opinions expressed by guests of Gold Star Classroom are meant for entertainment purposes only. For Gold Star Classroom, I'm Jerry Jaffe.